science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
AUT's Alan Blackman is in the studio for this week's edition of Dear Science. How are you going, Alan?
Very well, Will.
That is great. I'm well myself as well. Yeah. Well, thanks for asking.
How'd you go at the quiz last night, Will?
We are starting off by discussing the ongoing trend of using the internet to claim cures have been found for diseases like cancer, with this week's topic being about an Australian health blogger who is being fined $400,000 for claiming to have cured her own brain cancer. Alan, I think I have a fair idea of what the answer is here, but has she in fact cured cancer?
Yeah, well, this is a really, really sad story. You may have seen, I guess, in the news last week, the story of one Belle Gibson, who is an Australian, quote, wellness blogger, unquote. And as soon as you see the word wellness in anything, run a mile. It's like that and toxin, okay? So she was last week fined $410,000 Australian dollars in court. She didn't bother turning up to court to actually hear this. And all because of the fact that she claimed to have brain cancer and claimed to have cured it using sort of changes in lifestyle and organic foods and all that sort of stuff, etc., etc. So her history was, and nobody seems to know her backstory. She's a quite unusual lady, shall we say. But she claimed to have a stroke at the age of 20, and then she claimed she had brain cancer, and she was given 4 months to live, and so she had chemotherapy and stuff for about 2 months, and she gave it up after that. And then she changed her lifestyle, and she said that she was then cured by natural medicine, Gerson therapy, and foods. And so, not knowing what Gerson therapy was, I looked that up. And Gerson therapy was invented by some guy back in sort of the 20s, the 30s, there or thereabouts. And this is sort of a vegetarian lifestyle, organic stuff, raw juices, natural supplements, and the kicker, coffee enemas.
Go on, intriguing, yes.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not really a coffee drinker, but when I have coffee, I drink it. I don't sort of, go the other end, shall we say.
I mean,
this really is a tragic story. It's absolutely awful, probably shouldn't make light of it. But so she started blogging in about 2013.
Yeah.
And she launched an app and she wrote a book at the same time. And the app was called The Whole Pantry. Okay, yeah. So this is sort of this
and
sort
of
natural
crowdfunded
lifestyle.
Wasn't it? So she actually got people who believed in her to fund her falsified information.
And then she got Penguin Books to publish her book as well. And Penguin didn't sort of do any background checks on the validity of this sort of cancer diagnosis or anything like that. And she then said that she was going to give the proceeds of the app downloads to the family of a young boy who was suffering from brain cancer at the time.
Yeah.
And she did no such thing, sadly, so she never gave any money to him. And it eventually transpired that she didn't actually have brain cancer.
So she lied about 2 months of chemotherapy. This is, like, disgusting to me.
Well, yeah, no. It's utterly, utterly, utterly appalling. This little kid that she was going to donate to, he died earlier this year, aged 9 years old. Yeah. And so she basically got taken to court for sort of false claims and stuff like this. And she was busy saying that her brain cancer had spread to her blood and her spleen and her uterus and everything. And she claimed to have had heart surgeries, but she didn't have any scars, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then sort of people started questioning her, and eventually she went to the Australian Women's Weekly, as you do.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Under the heading "My Lifelong Struggle with the Truth," she admitted that she'd made it all up and it was all a lie. And quote, "I am still jumping between what I think I know and what is reality. I have lived it and I'm not really there yet." Whatever the hell that
means. What does that mean?
I know. What does that mean?
She doesn't even know who she is.
Schizophrenia?
Oh God,
well, she's a severely troubled person, I would
say. Yeah, to mislead thousands of people about something as important as cancer therapy.
Yes, yeah.
Or mislead, as I should say.
Absolutely. And
it's just...
Yeah, sadly, I mean, people believe this stuff, and that's the real bloody tragedy of it. And so, as I said, she was fined $410,000 Australian dollars, and the judge gave her no mitigation because of remorse or anything like that, because she didn't bloody show any, you know? You'd think... Possibly you might say sorry or whatever. I mean, especially the family of that young kid. It's utterly, utterly, utterly appalling.
The scary thing is we talk about this sort of thing every week, now.
No, I was just thinking that, actually. We should rename this to sort of Dear Non-Science. I mean, there's just the... I should sort of get away from these stories and stuff. But sadly, they just sort of crop up in the news just so often.
Yeah.
And that's part of why you have this thing, hopefully, yeah. so that people can then sort of make the decision as to what's in the media, is, you know, whether it's true, you know, whether it's good science or whether it's nonsense. And sadly, she was just peddling utter nonsense and, you know, making a lot of money out of it, yeah. too. And, oh, just appalling. Utterly appalling.
Do you know what she was actually convicted for in court?
Sort of the false claim type thing, and the promise of the money. I think that was the other thing as well, that she didn't deliver on that. So
right.
The fine was sort of broken down into separate sections for you know non-payment of the money and for making false claims and blah 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 blah, and utterly appalling. So I don't know what you do about people like this. They're just sort of confidence tricksters,
yeah.
or and you know they've been around since
forever.
You know, Adam was a boy, and they always will be, presumably, because yeah. you know there's a sucker born every minute, as one person famously said. So it's tragic. Just an awful story. She deserves everything she gets. And if you look around on the net, there's people calling for her to be in prison, really. And
yeah.
You know, $410,000 hopefully makes a decent hole in all the money that she got out of this fraudulent behaviour.
Of course,
yeah.
Up next, moving on from that depressing hole of a conversation.
Psychopath
to psychopath. We're talking about psychopaths.
Yes, indeed.
And how your favourite songs might mean you are a psychopath yourself. Now, Alan, I know you aren't the biggest fan of Eminem. Is that right?
That would be an understatement, yes.
Okay. Any young listeners out there who like Eminem are going, what? But how does music have anything to do with being a psychopath?
Well, here we go. And again, there's a story behind this too, which isn't really all good. But again, this made the headlines last week. And so it was reported that researchers at New York University, so, you know, decent university, and people in the psychology department, so they ran this study where they got people to sit this test to identify as to whether they're going to be, whether they have psychopathic tendencies yeah. or not. And then they played, so these were 200 people, I think. Yeah, 200 people. And then they played these people 260 songs and then basically asked them to, you know,
yeah.
rate the songs, whether they like them or not. And so the guts of it was that essentially, if you like Blackstreet's No Diggity, which I had never heard until this morning, and I don't think I'm ever going to listen to again.
Fair enough.
Or
wow.
That's a good song.
No, not a good song. Sorry, guys. Or Eminem Lose Yourself, which, again, you know, the National Party liked it, I guess.
Yeah, they loved it.
Yeah.
A lot.
So if you like those two, God, Stephen Joyce, you know. Okay. But apparently, if you like those two, your chances of being a psychopath increase. Whereas, if you like My Sharona by The Knack, now there's a song.
There's a good song.
There's
yeah,
a song.
I agree with you 100%.
That is a good song.
That's a song if I ever heard one.
Or Sia's Titanium, which, again, can't say I'd heard, but yeah, it sounded a bit.
That's interesting.
If you like those songs, then apparently you're right at the other end of the psychopathic scale. Apparently.
Okay.
Right, now that seems all nice and cut and dry, doesn't it?
Okay. It does.
So they've done the survey, blah de blah de blah de blah. Right, you read further down in the fine print. Turns out that this hasn't been published. These are preliminary findings.
Okay.
They haven't been published, they haven't gone through peer review.
Mm-hmm.
And also apparently they found other songs that were even more strongly indicative of psychopathic behavior,
yeah.
but they're not going to tell you what they are because they don't want to compromise their future research.
My initial,
which is utterly appalling.
My initial concern with the study is that a lot of the songs, without sounding like a dick, but they're sort of like mainstream, sort of popular culture, very, very popular culture sort mm-hmm. of music styles. I
yeah.
feel like if you delved into different genres as well, you could probably explore a lot more.
Yes, very possible. Well, you know, well, this is what they're going to
yeah.
do, obviously. You know, they're going to explore in greater detail. But this is not the way that you do science. This
yeah.
purports to be science. It's not the way that you do science. You wait until you've got all the bloody results, and then you go ahead and you publish it. You put it out to peer review.
Yeah.
And they then tell you whether you've done, you know, whether your research methodology is okay, whether you've done the study correctly, whether the results, the inferences you've drawn make sense.
Yeah.
None of that's been done. This is, as the authors say, it's preliminary
yeah.
research, and yet it's been picked up by media organisations all
yeah.
around the world, and it's being treated as gospel now. So, you know, if mm. you like, you know,
that's sort of that clickbait stuff. It's sort of, oh,
yes.
if your friend listens to this, they're
yep.
probably a psychopath. And
yep.
you go, oh,
yes.
Steve's
yes.
a psychopath.
Yeah. Well, one other thing, I guess, you know, what is a psychopath? That's exactly. The question. So nosing around. So apparently they've got this sort of 20 question questionnaire. So of which some questions were, do you have excess glibness or superficial charm?
Yeah.
Do you have a grandiose sense of self-worth? Are you a pathological liar? Are you cunning or manipulative? Do you display a lack of remorse or guilt? Are you callous or do you lack empathy? Or do you have a history of promiscuous sexual behaviour? If you answer yes to all of those, then chances are you might be a psychopath, okay? So I can think of one person in the world who probably ticks all those boxes quite nicely, but we can't name his name because...
He owns a few hotels, and he lives in a golf house aficionado, isn't he?
Yeah, indeed. Yes.
What are the applications that this could be used for, even though it's not published? Because I remember seeing in the article that they were saying they could use this information to test people if they were psychopaths without them knowing they were being tested for jobs or whatever.
Indeed. And that's really dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, because I feel
really,
like...
really, really dangerous.
Something a lot of people talk about, especially in popular culture and movies, is that, you know, like a psychopath is portrayed as a crazy murderer who busts down doors and cuts people over open with axes and things like that. But psychopaths are common. Well, not common, but they're more common than most people think. Well,
as I say in the article, you know, you could have one sitting next to you right now. You know, you just never know.
What were you saying, Ruben, before? That you're most likely to be a psychopath if you're a surgeon?
Oh, right. Yeah. Apparently the psyche of surgeons and stockbrokers very similar to that of psychopaths.
So grandiose sense of self-worth, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, sure. But doesn't mean to say you're a psychopath.
I mean, a couple of men who probably have a lot of self-worth at the moment. Not a couple, but a group of men who have won a Nobel Prize.
Indeed, yes.
For medicine.
Yes, indeed.
The study was for molecular processes that influence the internal body clock. That was a mouthful. Otherwise known as circadian rhythms, is that right? Circadian?
Yep.
What exactly have they discovered there?
Okay, so this was announced on Monday night, I guess, our time. And it's always fun watching in on these live, so you can live stream the Nobel Prizes and, you know, get the reactions of the people. They cold call them, you know, they don't know they're winning it prior to the announcement. So, you know, they ring them up on the phone and they wake them up in the middle of the night if you're in the States. And, you know, it's always very interesting to see people's response. But these three, so Jeffrey Hall, Michael Rosbach, and Michael Young, all from US universities, and they won it for studying circadian rhythms and in particular sort of showing how they had a molecular basis, so the molecular mechanisms controlling this. So basically we're talking molecules in the body that control the fact that we have got regular sleep patterns, for example. We eat at particular times because we're hungry then. Hormone release, blood pressure, all of those things that sort of have either sort of oscillate with time or they've got particular times during the day when we do those things. And so this has got quite a long history because all the way back to 1729 was the first experiment that showed that plants whose leaves open and close in response to sort of day or night, if you put them in a darkened room, they still do it. Okay,
so it's not a response to light itself.
Okay, so there's actually something going on in there that's regulating that at a particular time. So, you know, this internal
clock.
That's
crazy. Because there are those plants that open, what, like once every 4 years or something crazy? Those flowers?
On cactuses or something. About every 70 years or something. Some of those cactuses.
Oh, my God, okay.
They flower and then they die the next day or something. But so obviously there's something going on there that doesn't depend on whether it's light or dark or whatever. And in the 70s, then there was a lot of work with fruit flies, as there always have been, because they're very easy to work with. And so they took some mutant fruit flies and they just found that their sort of body clocks were all sort of screwed up. And they traced the mutant back to a particular gene or the mutation back to a particular gene. And so these guys started working on this particular gene, which they called the period gene.
Yeah.
And they found that that expressed a particular protein, and the protein was called PER, and it expressed it at night. And so, therefore, the amounts of this protein would increase during the night, and then they'd die down during the day, and then it would go all over again and again and again. So these levels of this protein would increase, and then they'd decrease, and then increase and decrease in a regular fashion. But then the question was, why don't they just keep increasing linearly? You know, why don't they increase all the time? So something was turning their production off, and then they found another gene that was giving another protein. They called this gene Timeless and this protein Tim. And they found that when Tim and Per got together,
yeah,
then they could get into the cell and they'd turn off the period gene. Okay?
Okay.
And that would stop the Per being produced. So that's why it would raise up, and then this other gene would come along, these two proteins get together, and then it stops the production, and then it starts again and stops again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's kind of the molecular basis of it. So it all comes down to a bunch of atoms in a gene that are all bonded together in a particular way, and that's what regulates our internal body clock. So that's, you know, why we feel crap when we've got jet lag,
yeah,
and why we go to sleep at 10 and wake up at 6, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know,
speak for yourself, Alan. Yeah.
And so this was discovered way back in sort of the early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
They did this work. And as you might expect, all of these guys are sort of fairly oldish now. A couple of them are emeritus professors. And
So it's quite an old study.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's one of the ones that was sort of apparently always on the radar to win the Nobel Prize. But this time's at time. So
cool.
And also last night, I guess the physics Nobel Prize was won as well.
Okay, yeah.
And this was for the first discovery of gravitational waves. And so these were first predicted by Einstein way back in sort of the early 1900s.
Yeah.
And essentially what he says is that you've got, this does my head, and you've got this four-dimensional space-time thing. Okay?
Okay.
Four dimensions, yeah.
Yeah.
And any sort of big cataclysmic event just sort of makes, it sort of causes ripples in this space-time, shall we say. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
And so they wanted to see if they could detect these ripples in space-time. So just, you know, it's basically movement of space-time. That's what you're looking for. And it's tiny, 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 tiny effect.
That seems a bit mind-blowing already.
It is indeed. And so they set up this thing to detect these gravitational waves. They call it the LIGO detector, which is short for Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. And this thing can detect essentially vibrations that are around about smaller than the diameter of the atomic nucleus. Okay.
Oh, and just casually, just, yeah, no, yeah, that makes sense.
An utterly, utterly, utterly amazing thing.
That is absurd.
I know, it's absolutely absurd. So what they found out was they detected gravitational waves from these two black holes that collided, and that's a cataclysmic event.
Yeah.
So that sent the whole of space-time ringing, as it were, and they detected these waves at two separate positions in the US because they've got these two LIGO detectors at separate places. And they know how fast these waves will be traveling, and they detected it at one place, and then very, very shortly other detected it at the other place. And again, the movement was utterly, utterly, utterly tiny, but that was the first, guaranteed detection of gravitational waves, which, you know, and that was only done in 2015. But
so fairly, yeah. Okay.
It's recent, but getting this thing up and running, as you can imagine, so it's basically 2 4-kilometer long laser beams, essentially, which are bouncing back and forward off mirrors, and then they come back and they meet at a point and they cancel each other out. Okay, after having travelled God knows how many kilometres up and down this thing.
Yeah.
And then if those mirrors that they're bouncing off, if they move just the slightest amount, then that means that they don't cancel out when they come back and meet.
So that's
what they call an interferometer. It's the interference of essentially two laser beams, or the same laser beam that's split in two, essentially. So the engineering behind it's quite extraordinary, absolutely, you know, mind-blowing, and
worth a Nobel Prize then.
Oh hell yes. But as I say, it was only done in 2015, but there was 20 or 30 years before this of setting this up and building the whole damn thing. And they, you know, they build this to do essentially the one experiment, to find the one thing. It's quite phenomenal the way that science works sometimes, the fact that they're going to fund this, you know, to just find gravitational waves. And, you know, now they've found them. And so that will then either give credence to particular theories for the way the universe was created, or the way it came into being through the Big Bang, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there'll still be gravitational waves from that, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's astonishing. Really, really amazing stuff.
That seems like a great place to finish off with science is awesome.
It is
like
indeed.
I was saying at the beginning, and if you don't agree, you can take your opinion elsewhere.
Better luck in the quiz next week, too.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Alan. No sarcasm.
Yeah. No, no.
Do you need another team member, Alan?
Don't you dare, Ruben.
Well, you know, what's your specialty? You know, what could you bring to the team, Ruben?
I'm a jack of all trades, really. master of none, but I've done Law 121 and a few bioscience papers. And
yeah, but you said you dropped out of the bioscience paper.
Oh, yeah, I passed it, though.
Anyway, this is The Wire, not The Ruben Show. Thanks, Ruben. Cool, thank you very much, Alan.
Okay, good to see you, Will. Thanks.
Cheers.
That was Dear Science.